Tonight is November
30th. Last day of November 30th. And we are continuing in Parshas Vayishlach. We are on page 186. As we move on now, after the story of Dinah, we move on to the next stage. Top of the page, Pasuk Aleph. Vayomer Elokim al Yaakov, Hashem said to Yaakov, Kum alei beis el v'shev sham. Get up and go to beis el and dwell there. Va'aseh sham mizbeach, and make there an altar. Lokel hanireh elecha, to the God that appeared to you. Bevarchacha, when you ran away, when you escaped. Mipnei Esav achicha, from before Esav your brother. Vayomer Yaakov al beiso, and Yaakov said to his household, Ve'el kol asherimo, and to all who were with him, Hasiru es Elohei Hanechar Asher Besochachem. Remove the foreign gods that are with you. Vihitaharu, and purify yourselves. Vachalifu simlosechem, and change your clothing. Vinakuma vina'ale beis el, and we will go up and we will go to beis el. Ve'es esham mizbeach, and I will make there an altar. Lakel ha'one osi, to the God who answered me. Vyom tzarasi, on the day of my tzaras, the day of my troubles. Vayihi imadi, and he was with me, baderech asher halachti, on the path that I went. Vayitnu al Yaakov, and they gave to Yaakov, eis kol Elohei hanechar asher biyadam, all of the foreign gods that were in their hands, ves hanizamim asher biyaznehem, and the rings that were in their ears, vayitmono sam Yaakov, and Yaakov buried them, tachas ha'elah asherim shechem, under the elah, which was a tree, type of tree, that is with Shechem. Vayiso, when they traveled, vayihichitas Elokim al ha'arim asher sivosehem, and the fear of God was on the cities that were around them. V'lo radfu acharei b'nei Yaakov, and they did not chase after the sons of Yaakov. Vayavo Yaakov Luza, and Yaakov came to Luz asher be'eretz Kanan, that is in Eretz Kanan. He Beisel, which is also known as Beisel. Who v'chol ha'am asher imo, he and all the nation that was with him. Vayiven sham mizbeach, and he built there an altar. Vayikol ha'makom Kael Beisel. He called the place Kael, which means God, Beisel. Kisham niglu elav ha'elokim, because there the Hashem appeared to him b'varchov b'nei achiv, when he ran from before his brother. Vatamas devora meinekes Rivka, and Devora, the wet nurse of Rivka, died. Vatikaver mitachas the Beisel tachas ha'alon, and she was buried beneath Beis El, under the Alon, which can mean a plain. How do they translate it here?
Plateau.
Plateau, okay. Vayikra Shemo Alon Bochus. And they called it the Plateau of Crying. Mm-hmm. Cryings. Mm-hmm. Okay, that is as far as we're going to go tonight. So, Hashem tells, this is an interval between the story of Dinah and the next major story, which will be the birth of Binyamin. And Hashem tells Yaakov to get up and go to Beis El and dwell there and build an altar to Hashem. So this command from Hashem is a reference back to what we saw in the beginning of Parshas Vayetze. If you hold the place and go back to when Yaakov first ran from Esav, back on page 144, and then 146. This is the famous story where Yaakov has the dream with the angels going up in the letter. That's actually this coming week's Parsha. And then, after he has the dream and he wakes up, he takes the stone and he makes it into an altar. We'll begin reading on page 146, Pasuk Yudches, verse 18. I'm sure you all remember it very clearly from when we last read it, which may have been, I don't know, before the summer. I don't know when we did it. But Vayashkem Yaakov Baboker, Yaakov got up early in the morning. Vayikach es ha'evin asher samer asher asav. He took the stone that he put at his head. Vayasem osa matzevon, he placed it as an altar. Vayitzok shemen al rosha, and he poured oil on its head. Vayikra es shem hamakom ahu Beis El. He called it Beis El. V'ulam Luz shem ha'ir la'rishana. However, initially its name was Luz. So Luz and Beis El are the same place. Vayida Yaakov neder le'mor. And Yaakov took an oath, saying, Imiye Elokim imodi, if God is with me, Ushmarani, and he'll protect me, Baderech hazeh asher anochi aleich, on this road that I am going, V'nosam lilechem lechol ovegid lilbosh, he'll give me bread to eat and clothing to wear, V'shavti v'shalom al beis avi, and I return in peace to the house of my father, V'hoyah Hashem li le'elokim, and God will be for me, Hashem will be for me as a God. If all that comes true, V'ho'evin hazos asher santi matzeva, this stone that I have placed as an altar, yeah, Beis Elokim will be a house of God. V'chol asher titenli, and all that he gives me, aser, all that you give me, aser asrenu lach, I will tithe to you. So Yaakov took an oath that he would tithe everything he gets and give it to Hashem, assuming that everything came out fine. So here, after the incident with Dinah, Hashem appears to Yaakov and tells him it's time to pay up. It's time to fulfill your end of the deal. I took care of you all the time that you were with Laban. I took care of you. I saved you from Laban. I saved you from Esav. You had what to wear. You had what to eat. I was with you as a God. You were protected. So now it's time for you to fulfill your end of the deal, which has come to Beis El, and then fulfill your and bring sacrifices on this altar. Make a mizbeach, make an altar, and do what you said. So Yaakov tells his family that we're about to do this. And he tells them how to prepare themselves, and they go. And then it says in our back in page 186, back where we are. Pasuk Vav, verse 6, which we just read. Vayavo Yaakov Luza, Yaakov comes to Luz, Asher Be'eretz Canaan, which is in Canaan, he Beis El, which is also Beis El, as we just read. Hu v'chol ha'am Asherimo, he and all the nation that's with him. Vayiven Sham Mizbech, and he built there an altar. Vayikol ha'makom Kel Beis El, etc. And that's the end of the story. Then we have the death of Devorah Menachas Rivka.
She built a second altar?
Okay, so is this the same altar? Is it a different altar? It seems like it's a new altar. He had made a matseva. He had made a one stone altar. Now he builds a mizbeach. Either that means that he takes the same matseva and makes it into an altar, or he builds a new one.
It does not say Rivka died.
It says Devorah died. We'll get to that. That we'll cover. Hopefully, we'll tend to cover that tonight. Okay, that'll be the last thing for this evening. Now, the Yaakov had a difficult time with Lavan, as we know. He had a difficult time. Lavan tricked him. He ended up marrying more wives than he had intended. He ends up, therefore, there is some rivalry, as we've talked about. There is an issue running away from Lavan. There is the issue of Esav and his battle with the angel of Esav. And he has not had it easy. But at the end of the day, he does survive. At the end of the day, he has been protected. At the end of the day, he is close to Hashem, and he has produced 11 of the 12 tribes. The 12th one will be born shortly. His wife Rachel is pregnant with the 12th child at this point, 12th son. And things have progressed relatively smoothly, although there have been some bumps in the road. The Dinah incident is a very sad incident, but it does not derail the overall focus of Yaakov and what he is doing. And now Hashem tells him it's time to come to Beis El and do your part. Yes?
He was already there. Why did he go to Shechem?
Well, he wasn't at Beis El. You mean he
built an altar there.
That was long before he went. He was in Beis El on his way out to Lavan.
Oh.
And now he comes back. Now, he Shechem is to the north of Yerushalayim. And where is Beis El? So, Beis El There is a Beis El that is north of Yerushalayim as well, between Shechem and Yerushalayim. Shechem is the further north, then comes Beis El, and then comes Yerushalayim. However, we know that when Yaakov has his incident back in Parashas Vayetze, in the beginning of Parashas Vayetze, with Beis El, we know that that is a place that was really Yerushalayim, which he called Beis El. And there's a medrash over there which we talked about at the time when we learned it about Yerushalayim, actually the mountain itself moving to meet Yaakov. That's the whole thing which we talked about back then, which we're not going to get into now. But at any rate, Chazal tell us, our sages tell us, that this Beis El that we're referring to is the Temple Mount. And that he made it into an altar, and he said this will be a house of God, he means the Beis HaMikdash. That is where the temple is built, and that's where he offers his sacrifices. That's where eventually his children will build the temple.
Yeah.
Okay.
Why in his household did he allow idols?
Oh, we're going to cover that. Very good. Excellent. What idols? Right? Yeah. Okay. Good question. Yeah, we're going to cover that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, it says idol.
They gave him all the idols. All the idols.
Yeah. Okay. All right. So we're going to cover that. That's an excellent point. We're going to get to that. Yes.
And how did Yaakov know that that's what he meant? That this is going to be the place to meet
them? I don't know for sure. It's likely he did. You know, we've already shown that all of them, Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, all recognized that Har HaMoriah, the Temple Mount, was a very special place, the place that was the strongest connection on earth to God. So
Har HaMoriah is the famous?
Yeah, yeah.
Famous roots.
Right. That's what our sages tell us. So the tricky part is being able to figure out that it's the closest place on earth to God. But once you figure that out, it doesn't take a rocket scientist to figure out that that's where the temple is going to be. Right? There, we would never have realized that that is the place that has the strongest presence of God on earth. But they did, and once they realized it, then it was clear to them that it would be the Temple Mount. So I suspect that they knew.
But which goes first? The fact that Isn't that where...
That's where the Akedah was, right? It was before that already that they knew that... Because Rashi already told us in Parshas Lech Lecha that Abraham was heading there because he knew that that's where Hashem's presence was the strongest. So that was already... That preceded the Akedah. So now, with this in mind, look again on page 186, what we're up to. Look again at the first Pasuk. Vayomer Elokim al Yaakov, Hashem says to Yaakov, Kum alei Beis El, v'shev sham. Get up and go to Beis El and dwell there. Va'asei sham mizbeach, and make there an altar. So why does he have to dwell there? Dwell there? He wants him to settle down over there, live there for a little while? So the Sforno says that, I may be quoting the wrong one second. Is it the Sforno or is it the Das HaKenim Balatayis? I am now drawing a blank on which of the two commentaries it is that says this. But that we know the Gemara tells us in Brachos, in Tractate Brachos, Masachas Brachos, that the great pious ones of the past, the way they would approach davening, prayer. And what do? We walk into shul, and we open up a siddur, and we daven. Right? We just walk right in and daven. That's what we do. And hopefully we concentrate on what we're supposed to be concentrating on, but we know that it's not so easy. Our mind wanders. You know, we think of this, we think of that. And hopefully we also think of the words that we're supposed to be saying, and we try to daven to Hashem properly. The very pious ones of the previous generations, going back to pre-Talmudic times, what they would do is they would come in to pray, and they would first sit for an hour, and they would meditate, think about what they're about to do. Consider, what am I going to do right now? I'm going to be approaching God, I'm going to be speaking to God. Then they would pray for an hour, and then they would re-enter the atmosphere. They would come back down for an hour. It would take them 3 hours to pray. An hour to get in the right frame of mind, an hour to actually pray, and then an hour basically to incorporate what they've just done into their daily lives so they can go back to being a regular person. Yeah?
Is that why some of the Hasidim traditionally have a much longer time with their davening and certain Hasidic groups have a reputation?
I don't believe they do this.
Well, they don't do that,
right.
But is that what they're trying?
Can't tell you. I don't know. I don't know if that's what they're trying to do. This is something which is of the past, which nobody does anymore, because if you think about it, they had an oven 3 times a day, times 3 hours, that's 9 hours. The Gemara itself asks, if they spent 9 hours on prayer, so then what happened to their learning of Torah, and what happened to their work, to make money, to live? What happened to all of that? So the Gemara basically says, if you spend 9 hours of prayer, don't worry about it. Once you, if you can get to that level, don't worry, things will work themselves out. First get there, then worry about it. That's basically what the Gemara says. Okay, that's not for us. That's a level that's beyond our ability. It's not something which we can aspire to. But it's giving an idea of, it's giving us a perspective of what it means to really pray. It means, because you can't just walk in and pray, even though Hashem doesn't mind if we just pray to Him, but there's a frame of mind of realizing that we're facing God. We're talking directly to God. So the one of the commentaries says that's what Hashem means over here when He says to Yaakov, "Go to Beis Elvis, shev sham, dwell there." He doesn't mean stay there for a few years. He means don't just walk in and say, "Okay, I'm building an altar." That's not the way to come and talk to me. You want to build an altar, which is essentially praying to God. Come in, sit down, relax for a minute, think about what you're about to do, then construct the altar. So for our purposes, even though we're not certainly going to do like the great pious ones of the past, but we can certainly apply it to ourselves in a small measure, which is that when we do walk into synagogue and we're going to pray, it is appropriate to walk in, you know, take a sitter, sit down, and just stop, pause for a moment. Before opening up the book and begin to pray, pause for a moment, just think about, okay, what am I about to do here? I'm facing God. I am now going to be talking directly to my Maker about the things that are most important to me. And I want to connect with Hashem. And then open up the book and begin to pray. That is what is being taught to us with the statement over here, Veshev Sham and dwell. Settle before you begin to pray. Thank you. It is a nice thought. I thought so. Now, there's other things that we learn from the fact that this is the site of the temple. For example, it says, Yaakov says to his family, I'm skipping the part about the foreign gods, which we'll get to in a minute, but if you look at Pasuk Gimel, verse 3, V'nakuma v'na'alev Yisrael, we will go up and we will two words for going up, to Beis El. So we will go up to Beis El. This word Vinakuma appears only one other place in Chumash. Only one other place. Nope. In this exact conjugation, the exact word Vinakuma only shows itself one other time in Chumash. It's in Sefer Bereishis. I ask you to hold the place and to turn. No, good guess. But that's not it. Any other guesses? We haven't had it yet. It'll be later on. If you look in Parshas Miketz, after the brothers go down to Yosef for food, not knowing that he's Yosef, and Yosef realizes who they are, they don't realize who he is. And Yosef says to his brothers, if you want any more food from me, you're going to have to go back and bring down your brother Binyamin, who Yaakov didn't want to send. They go back and Yaakov refuses to send Binyamin, and they just sit in Eretz Canaan waiting to run out of food because Yaakov refuses to send Binyamin for fear of losing Binyamin. So finally, Yehuda says, he takes responsibility, and Yehuda says to his father, I have to find it first. Hold on, give me 1 second. It's on page 240. Pasuk Chaf, thank you. Verse 8. Vayomer Yehuda el Yisrael Aviv. Yehuda says to Yisrael, his father, Shilcha hanar iti, send the lad with me, v'nakuma v'neilecha, we will get up and we will go. V'nichyeh, and we will live. V'lo namus, we will not die. Kam anachnu, kam ata, kam tapenu. Also us, also you, also our children. So, the Balaturim points out that this reference of Vinakuma that Yehuda is saying over here is that he says to his father, in the merit of the fact that you took us all up to Beis El, back in Parashas Vayishlach, right here that we're about to read, that in that merit that you went to Beis El and you made the altar for Hashem, in that merit we will now get up and we will go to Egypt and we will live and we will not die. That will be in a direct merit for this. It's also striking that Yehuda's words, if you take it out of context, just read it as it is, we will get up, we will go, we will live, and we will not die. That is the way to approach prayer. That's exactly the whole idea. We will get up, we will go and pray to Hashem, we will live, and we will not die. Now, so, you asked before, and it's a good question, what is with these foreign gods? Were they idol worshippers? So Yaakov wasn't an idol worshipper. Did he allow idolatry in his household?
Well, it just says in Sfarim Shechem that to go out of the world and everything.
Okay. Okay, so they had taken spoils from Shechem. Now Shechem was an idolatrous nation. The people were with Shechem. So, now, after they've taken everything, the spoils, Yaakov says to his household, it is time to get rid of those things. Now, the commentaries say over here, they didn't take actual idols, and they knew better than that, they wouldn't take idols, but they took things that reminded them, or that connected them, to the people of Shechem. And so Yaakov says to them, that's not acceptable. When you're going up to Beis El, which is God's place, you need an extra level, extra measure of purity, of sanctification. It's one thing for your everyday lives, okay, so you're wearing a garment that you got from Shechem, okay. But if you're going up to where the Beis HaMikdash is eventually going to be, it does require an extra level of sanctity, and we need to get rid of these things. It is true, in a time when the temple will be rebuilt speedily and in our days, that if we're going to go and visit the Beis HaMikdash, we are going to have to purify ourselves in an extra special way. We all have to go to the mikvah before we go to the Beis HaMikdash and make sure our clothing is pure, etc. One has to make sure that they are in an extra level, an extra measure of purity before going to where the Beis HaMikdash is. And so Yaakov tells them in Pasuk Beis, verse 2, Hasiru es Elohei HaNechar Asher B'Sachem, remove the foreign gods that are with you. As the commentary say, it doesn't mean actual foreign gods, but it means that which is connected to the foreign gods. V'hi ta'aru, and purify yourselves, v'achalifu simlo seichem, and change your clothing. One of the commentaries, the Das Zekeni Bala Atosva, says, change your clothing, and then it says, v'nakuma v'na'ale Beis El, then we will get up and go to Beis El. That is a reference to what the Gemara says, or I should say the Gemara is a reference to here, that when a person goes in to pray in a shul, one should wear a special garment. That's why the custom in the yeshivas is that the students put on a jacket and a hat when they're ready to daven, even though they don't wear jackets and hats the entire day. But when they go into daven, they are expected to put on a jacket and a hat. And that is as a special measure of wearing a special garment for the purpose of prayer. The Gemara tells us it is meritorious to wear a special garment for prayer. That is where the custom comes from for the Hasidim, some Hasidim, well, I guess all Hasidim do this, that they wear a gartel, they wear a special belt that they put over their jackets, they put a belt on just for prayer. That is to have a special item just for the sake of prayer. For some people, the talis that we wear could be that item, but it's a meritorious thing to have a special davening garment that is worn specifically for davening or something extra special. When we go before God, it's not the same thing. Even though we say, Shivisi Hashem Lenegni Samin, Hashem is in front of me all the time. And we know Hashem's presence is everywhere. Malochol Ha'aretz Kivodo. But when one is facing God directly in prayer, there's an extra level of sanctity and purity that one has to achieve. And so a special garment for the sake of davening is appropriate. And that is also derived from here, that he tells them, change your clothing as we go up to visit Hashem.
That teaching in Papa Kondit, so 3 days before the Israel went to Har Sinai, they also were supposed to purify themselves in the mix and make the five change of clothes.
Yeah, but that would not be approved, because over there that was to receive the Torah, which was a special, that was a whole different, because there God revealed himself on Har Sinai in a way that had never before or since been done. Why? So that wouldn't prove anything. That would just be, then you'd have to have that special level. This is for general prayer. Now he tells them, we're going to go up to Beis El and I'm going to make an altar for the God who answered me on my day of trouble, and he was with me on the way that I went. So they gave to Yaakov all of the foreign gods that were in their hands and the earrings, and Yaakov buried them under the Elah, under this tree that is with Shechem. Now, why did Yaakov bury it under a tree?
Isn't that the tree that Yisrael led us
out of? It could be. It doesn't say that. It doesn't say there was a tree that Yisrael led us out of. Do you know a source for that?
No. In the past, we came across a special tree that we used for...
That's called an Asherah.
Oh, Asherah.
Yeah, yeah. So, the simple answer is... this is. What's that?
So they could find it.
No, so they couldn't find it. The thing is like this. When you have things that are associated with Avodah Zarah, with idolatry, you're supposed to destroy it. We have a mitzvah in the Torah, stated several times, that idolatry should be destroyed. You're supposed to either burn it, or melt it down, or if you can't do any of the above... you're supposed to throw it into the ocean, so it's lost forever. That's what you're supposed to do with Avodah Zarah, idolatry. Here, they couldn't, there was no ocean nearby. Yaakov did not have the time or the wherewithal to completely obliterate these things, so he buried them. But he buried them, he didn't want to bury them in the ground in just an open place, because you can see, you can tell where a place has been dug up and buried. And someone may think that there's something there and then dig it up again. So he buried it under a tree so that the digging wouldn't be noticeable, and that way no one would realize that there was something there. That's the simple meaning.
Is it digging also to take out some of the tumah?
What's that?
Is it digging also to take out some
no,
of the
No, just to get rid of it.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. So that's the simple meaning. We will have an additional reference to this as we finish tonight, but let's hold off with that for now. So that's what he does. Now here, again, we have an interesting word, which only has one other word like it in the rest of the Chumash, and that is in Pasuk Hey, verse 5, Vayiso, and they traveled, Vayihi chitas Elokim al ha'arim asher sivosehem, the fear of God was on the cities that were around them, V'lo radfu acharei b'nei Yaakov, they did not chase after the sons of Yaakov. Why would they have chased after the sons of Yaakov?
Because of what they did
to Shechem. That's what Yaakov said to his sons, that you have now, you've stirred up the pot, now the people living here are going to gather around me and try to destroy me. So here it tells us that no, God protected them, they needed God's protection because they would have attacked, but God protected them and they were afraid to attack. The fear of God was on the nations around them, they did not attack because they were afraid to. So this word Vayiso, and they traveled, as I said, appears only one other place in the Chumash.
In the Midbar
where they traveled. Hold the place over here. Turn to Parshas Behaloscha. Page. Page 784. On page 784, the Torah describes a traveling of the Jewish nation. The Jews, as we know, traveled many times throughout the 40-year sojourn in the wilderness. And this describes one of those travels. So it talks about what order they traveled in. They were, of course, in four different camps. the camp led by the tribe of Yehuda, the one led by the tribe of Ephraim, the one led by the tribe of Reuven, and the one led by the tribe of Dan. And it describes each one's traveling, and it describes the traveling of the Levim who carried the Mishkan, which had been dismantled, and then the traveling of the Aron, of the altar, the Ark, and how they went about it. So after describing the entire process of traveling, the very last verse, Pasuk Chaf Ches, verse 28, Eilam Masei v'nei Yisrael, these are the travels of the Jewish people, Letzibo Sama, according to their hosts, Vayisau, and they traveled. Same word as over here. Again, the Baal HaTurim says that the reference to the same word is to teach us that when the Jews traveled in the Midbar, they also were graced by Hashem's striking fear in the nations that were around them, and they did not attack the Jewish people as we traveled in the wilderness. Just as over here, when the children of Yaakov traveled, Ma'ase Avo Simen La'Banim, the actions of the patriarchs, is symbolic of what would happen in the future. When the children of Yaakov traveled, they were protected, special protection from God. So too, when we traveled in the wilderness, we also had that special protection from God.
Right, so, Beit El is Jerusalem. He walked all the way down to Jerusalem, told them to give me all the idols, in which case he walked all the way back up again to Shechem.
They hadn't left yet. They were, Hashem told them, you are to go. They were in Shechem. He said, go to Yerushalayim. First they buried it, and then they went to Beit El. Okay. Now, yeah.
Where it says that they took out the rings that were in their
Yes.
Is anything said about that?
Yeah, so I did not...
That doesn't mean that we're not supposed to wear...
No. Women are supposed to wear earrings. I wondered about this. Why is that being singled out? It was not singled out previously. You don't see it in the... We know, there must have been rings and earrings in the spoils of Shechem, but it's not specified. And here, it's singled out. So I wondered about that. I didn't see anybody speak about it specifically. The only thing that occurred to me is we know in one other place in the Torah where earrings are specifically mentioned in reference to idolatry. Okay, at the golden calf, it was the earrings that were used to make the golden calf. So I wonder if there is some connection between here and there, but I don't know for sure. I looked into it briefly, and I didn't see anything on the surface, so I left it. But I wonder if there's a connection between those two things.
Okay, but it's not telling us.
No. It's perfectly acceptable for a woman to wear earrings. No question.
Was that the earrings of the man? Because the women did.
That's right. At that time, that's right. Right, because the women didn't refuse to give them up. That's right.
I was also wondering about, since we took all the things from Shechem, so what about the sheep? And that has nothing,
It doesn't say they gave away those things. It seems it was only the material objects.
Women,
not
and the children.
Those were slaves.
So we kept those things.
It doesn't say they got rid of them. They certainly didn't bury them.
Because, the people certainly didn't give up their idol worship.
If they were taken as slaves, then a Jewish slave, a non-Jew who is made a slave of a Jew, is essentially a forced conversion. We'll learn about that when we get to slavery. The whole notion of what slavery is in the Torah is completely different than our frame of reference, are the black slaves in America. The Torah's version of slavery is completely different, but we have to cover that as a separate topic.
I understand that. I was just wondering, is it mainly jewelry that we're talking about?
It seems it was mostly jewelry and clothing that were the main things. Yeah. Now, the last pasuk that we're going to do this evening, as we already read, is pasuk Ches, verse 8. So he went to Beit El, and he makes the altar, etc. Then it says, "Vatamas Devora Meinekes Rivka." Devora, the wet nurse of Rivka, died. "Vatikaver mitachas leBeisel tachas haAlon." She was buried under Beisel. Beisel was on a hill, as we know, it's a Temple Mount, so at the bottom of the hill. Tachas Alon, under the plateau. Vayikra Shemo Alon Bachus, and it was called Alon Bachus, the plateau of crying. Where did Devorah come from? This is the very first mention of Devorah. She had not been mentioned before. The more famous Devorah is the Devorah in Shoftim, who was the Shofetah, she was one of the judges of the Jewish people. This Devorah, who is the original Devorah, had not been mentioned before. We didn't even know that Rivka had a wet nurse. And now, she not only is made mention of, she also dies. So it's like, hello, goodbye. Where is she coming from? It's out of nowhere. So who is this person? And what is this business that she's buried, and that it's called the Alone of Crying? So Rashi comes to our rescue and explains that if you recall back in Parashas Toldos, and we talked about this again in Parashas Vayetze, Rivka had told Yaakov, run away to Lavan, liyamim achadim, for a few years, and then I will send for you after Esav calms down and isn't angry with you anymore, I will send for you so you'll come back home. If you recall in Parashas Vayetzi, when Yaakov was ready to leave, we pointed out that Rivka had not sent for him because Esav had not calmed down. After 20 years, Esav still harbored his anger for Yaakov and had not calmed down. Therefore, Rivka couldn't send for him. But remember, we talked about how there were two reasons to leave Lavan. He had gotten married, which was his father's reason for going to Lavan, but Esav had not calmed down, which was his mother's reason for going to Lavan. So he left. But Esav was still angry with him. And that
she left with somebody.
She?
Rivka.
Left with somebody.
Well, she left her family home to marry Isaac.
Yeah.
She sent, and her nurses.
Okay, excellent. That's the only reference you have. Okay, very good. Give us the page over there. Let's look at it together.
118.
Okay, look at 118. Thank you, Mrs. Winberg. We are going to get through this. We're going to get through this, provided we don't all suffocate beforehand. Okay. Now. I'm sorry. If you look on page 118. In Pasuk. Nuntes, thank you, 59. This is when Rivka, as a young bride, leaves her family, Lavan and her mother. It says, Vayeshalchu es Rivka achosam ve'es meinikta. So I was wrong. We do know that she had a wet nurse. It says they sent Rivka and her wet nurse. They sent her away. But it doesn't list her name over there. Now we know that her name was Devorah. So that is... Was that? No. It means.
She was how old?
No. It's the one that she would use to as a wet nurse when she has children. It's not her babysitter. So, at least I don't believe it's her babysitter. But anyway, they sent her with a menekes who essentially works as a shivcha, as a maid of Rivka. So here, this Menekes all of a sudden appears with Yaakov at Beis El. So Rashi explains that Rivka finally sent for Yaakov. That finally she sent for him. Now why would she send for him now? Because finally, Esav is no longer angry with him. So now, Rivka is fulfilling what she had said she was going to do, which is that when Esav is no longer angry, I will send for you. Well, they had the confrontation. Esav did finally calm down. So now Rivka sends her wet nurse, Devorah, to Yaakov to tell him it's okay to come home. The coast is clear.
She must have been an old lady to send such an old lady in such a journey.
Well, it wasn't that far in the end because Yaakov had already been, it was already in Eretz Yisrael at this point. So she meets up with him and she passes away at the bottom of Beis El. And then they bury her, and he called the name Alon Bachus. Now Bachus means cryings. So what's the double cryings? What's the plural? So Rashi explains, because he was also told then of another death in addition to the death of Devorah. It was also the death of his mother Rivka. And here, Rivka is, there's a reference to Rivka's death. And we, of the matriarchs, we know when Sarah died. Of course, Chaye Sarah it says Sarah died. We know when Rivka died. Here, this is the reference to Rivka's death. And we are going to be told very shortly about Rachel's death, because she's going to die in childbirth when Binyamin is born. Leah is the only matriarch where her death is not explicitly recorded. It does say later on that Yaakov says to Yosef, I buried Leah in the Ma'aras HaMachpelah, in the cave. But it doesn't actually say specifically, and Leah died. But the other three are mentioned. Here it's only hinted to, that Rivka died. Rashi explains to us, why didn't the Torah specifically mention Rivka's death? Why is it only through a remez, through a hint? And that is because the world shouldn't curse the womb from which Esav emerged. So in order not to bring that curse, therefore her death is obscured. Now that's a fascinating thing. Because why doesn't the world bless the womb from which Yaakov emerged? So we see, therefore, that although it is true Yaakov comes from Rivka, and certainly that is her quote-unquote claim to fame, not only that, but we all know about Rivka's orchestrating the whole episode with the blessings for Yaakov, and ultimately for us, and Rivka is remembered for that, but remember that Yaakov's ultimate purpose and goal in this world has not yet come to fruition. We are still on that journey. We are still carrying that torch and lifting that banner. And we are still ultimately the ones who are going to bring about the fruition of Yaakov's journey and Yaakov's mission. And so, although it's true Rivka's womb is from where Yaakov emerged, and eventually, once we complete that mission, the world will bless the womb from which Yaakov emerged. But until that happens, instead of the two forces, the Yaakov force in the world and the Esav force in the world, the Esav force is stronger and more obvious and doing more damage than Yaakov is doing good. And so therefore, the world would sooner curse the one who produced Esav rather than bless the one who produced Yaakov. And so therefore, Esav's mother's death is obscured in the pasuk. Now, in the last few minutes we have, I want to call your attention to this word alon. They bury her under the alon, which is translated as plateau. And alon does mean plateau, but it can also mean something else. It can also mean a type of tree. And alon is a tree, is a type of tree. What's that? It can also be a tree. In Israel today, and alon is a type of tree. I don't know exactly what type of tree it is. I know that when I lived in Israel as a young boy, we lived on Alonim Street.
Like a peach tree.
Right. But there wasn't Alonim and Alonim, so I don't know, you know. But anyway, so I don't know what kind of tree, but it is a type of tree. So we have, if that is true, if she was buried also under or near a tree, then we have two references to two different types of trees right here. We have the Elah, under which he buried all of the booty from Shechem, and the Alon, under which he buried Devorah. There's another tree that Yaakov is associated with. And that tree we had back in Parshas Vayetze. There are three types of trees that Yaakov is associated with. The Elah and the Alon over here. And if you go back to Parshas Vayetze, when Yaakov was trying to get the flock that he had from Lavan to give birth to the right color and stripes of sheep and goats. So he devised a plan, and he took a stick, a tree, a piece of wood. And if you go back to page 160, actually, if you go back just a little bit further, 158. Pasuk Lamed Zayin, the bottom of the page verse 37. Vayikach lo Yaakov makal livneh. Yaakov took a livneh rod, which is translated as a poplar rod. I don't know how they know it's a poplar rod, but that's what they say. Lach, which was moist. Veluz ve'armon. And hazel and chestnut. Okay. So, and then he made strips, he cut strips in them, etc. He made white strips so that it was brown and white, brown and white. So he took this makal livneh. In the book of Hosea, which is the first of Treyasar, of the 12 smaller prophets, my uncle, Olav HaShalom, was very critical of those who called it the minor prophets. So they're not minor, they're just smaller. They're shorter. But they're not minor. Right? So the first of the 12 Treyasar of the smaller prophets. So in Perek Dalet, in the fourth chapter, there is a pasuk which is criticizing the Jewish people. And it says, Al Roshei Haharim Yezabechu, on the tops of mountains they would offer sacrifices. This is that they would commit idolatry. And on the hills they would burn incense. Takas, under, alone, vilivne, ve'ela. Under three types of trees, the alone tree, the livne tree, and the ela tree. That's what the Jewish people would do. And they're being chastised here by Hosea for having worshipped idolatry under these three trees, the alone, the livne, and the Eilah. It is not coincidental that the three trees that are mentioned here in Hosea are three trees that we find in reference to Yaakov. If you want the address, it's Perek Dalet, the fourth chapter of Hosea, Pasuk Yud Gimel, verse 13. And what is meant by these three trees? And I believe that these three trees are each symbolic of another aspect of service to Hashem that Yaakov did and that the Jews are being admonished for that they did not live up to. They didn't live up to the patriarch Yaakov's example of Alon, Livneh, and Eilah. And what are those three things? So let's think it through. The Livneh tree, which is in Parashas Vayetze, that was used by Yaakov in order to amass great wealth. So the Eilah tree, the Livneh tree, is associated with wealth, with material wealth. That is how he managed to get the wealth of Lavan. That is the Livneh tree. Here, in what we're reading on page 186, the Alon tree is where he buried the Avodah Zarah. That tree is associated with separating from idolatry. So we have material wealth. We have idolatry. And what is the Alon... Actually, that was the Eilah tree. Yeah, I mixed them up. That was the Eilah tree. What is the Alon tree symbolic of? The death of Devorah and of Rivka. What would you say that's symbolic of? If the Livneh tree is material wealth and how Yaakov used material wealth properly, the Eilah tree is Yaakov separating himself from Avodah Zarah, from idolatry, what would the Alon tree represent?
Wouldn't that be spiritually, letting the soul return?
Because of death, because of burying...
Separated from the body.
Okay. So burying the person properly in the ground, the soul. Okay, any other ideas? It wasn't just anybody he was burying. Who was he burying? He was burying his mother's wet nurse, which was symbolic of his mother himself, because she had died and she was buried as well. Not by him, but she had been buried as well at this time. So it is, I agree with you, it has to do with burying and the separation of the soul, but also the connection to the previous generations, to parents, and going back to the Mesorah, to the traditions of the previous generations. So it seems to me that these three trees that are associated with Yaakov, and that the Jews are admonished for in Sefer Hosea for not living up to, represent the three things that we are told that we must love Hashem with all of. The Ahavta is Hashem Elokecha, you shall love Hashem your God, if we say in Shema, B'chol levavecha, with all your heart, B'chol nafshecha, with all your soul, U'b'chol me'odecha, and with all of your money, with all your material wealth. It seems to me that B'chol levavecha, all of your soul, all of your heart, is a reference to Avodah Zarah. All of your heart should be directed to God, not to foreign gods, but to only to God. And that would be represented by the Eilah tree. That's B'chol levavecha. U'b'chol nafshecha, all of your soul, which is why she says, "Afim hu no teles nafshecha," even if God is taking your soul, you have to give up your life for God. So there, that would be the Alon tree, which is where he buried Devorah, and Rivka's death is also referenced. That is b'chol nafshecha, with all your soul, and b'chol me'odecha, that is the Livneh tree, that is the tree that represents material wealth, that we have to worship Hashem with all of our wealth. And so, in Hosea, when he says to the Jews that you are worshipping idolatry, you're going against God underneath the Alon, the Livneh, and the Eilah, it seems to me that this is a reference to those three things, that b'chol levavcha, b'chol nafshecha, b'chol me'odecha, that they were not doing properly, and so they're being admonished. Yaakov, on the other hand, is associated with those three trees as having done each of these things properly. And so he becomes the example that they are chastised for not living up to. And that is the Eilah, the Alon, and the Livneh. Whether these three trees specifically have characteristics that have to do with those three things, meaning this one have leaves that look a certain way that somehow is symbolic of wealth, and this one has a branch that is symbolic of separation from idolatry, that I don't know, because I'm not sure exactly what these trees are, and even if I knew the names of the trees, I don't know how trees look well enough to be able to make these guesses. But it seems to me that's what the three trees in Hosea are connected to, the three references, the trees we have here in Parshas Vayishlach, the two in Vayishlach and the one in Parshas Vayetz.
Commentary 3.
Yeah.
Where does it, why all of a sudden he describes that and then he says, only he who has eaten must recite grace. Where did that part actually, not another who is at the table but has not eaten? So why grace, or to say grace all of a sudden at this period, where it doesn't really say there's a meal? Page
186. Yeah, I'm looking at it. I guess the Zohar is saying that the reason why Yaakov had to do it himself is because he's the one he had the one who had gotten the miracles more than everybody else.
Yeah, but it doesn't mention anything that he's eaten.
Well, just as the one.
The commentary.
Just as the one who he's making a connection, just like the one who eats has to recite the bracha, so too the one who was saved has to build the altar. That's the connection that the Zohar seems to be making. Yeah.
Back to 158 when it's talking about the rod of poplar.
Yeah.
One of the trees, I guess hazel, is a luz.
Yeah.
Does that have? Yeah. How does that connect?
That obviously connects to Luz, the city of Luz. Clearly.
And the Luz Bone.
And the Luz Bone, yeah. It obviously does. I don't know how. I noticed that as well. Yeah, I'm not sure. Yeah, you can't miss it. It's the same word.
I'm like, okay, wait a minute.
Yeah.
Can we go to this tradition has me a little puzzled because Rivka went to Yaakov. Yeah.
Rivka. No, Rivka. What do you mean?
Rivka.
Yeah.
Went with her
wetner. No. She only sent her wetner. She only sent Devorah.
Devorah.
Right.
You mean in the beginning? In the very beginning.
Oh, the very beginning, right. They left together from...
Yeah,
from
when she was a little
child. When she went to marry...
So
yes.
What I'm confused about is usually, a wetner means that you're nursing a baby.
Right. So it was
you gotta be pregnant.
No, so it was in preparation for her being having a child and then having someone to nurse the baby.
But I mean, did she become a wife too?
I don't know. I don't know what the.
You have to be able to nurse.
Yeah.
And have a baby.
Before, I just want to make it before you run out. I just want to mention. I know you're running. I just want to mention that in 3 weeks' time, which would be. That would be Hanukkah. The first night of Hanukkah is a Sunday night. It was the 21st. So that night, I just want to make it known now that we the Pranskys would like to invite our whole shir that we should have this class at our home that first night of Hanukkah. That way we can have our class along with some homemade latkes and other Hanukkah goodies. So that class will be in my home, Berlinetter, 1289 Bramble Road. That'll be on the 21st. I'll remind you again in the ensuing weeks.
Thank you.